Hello, welcome everybody. This is Cheryl. We are here for our second call for Grace Through Uncertainty. Today is October 18th, 2018. So welcome to those of you on the live call. So very happy to be sharing this hour with you. Just a reminder that if you have a question, especially if you had one in the previous call that didn't get answered, but anybody who has a question, if you press star 2 on your phone, it will show up on my screen and I will be able to connect with you when we get to that part of the call. And I very much look forward to connecting. So let's start with our 1 minute of getting present, of dropping into this moment, coming into your body, coming into your breath, giving ourselves the gift of a pause between the motor of the day, the endless hum, the endless activity, the endless doing and going and thinking, and see if you can come into this moment of breath. There will still be thoughts there, but you will be noticing the thoughts, noticing what is happening in this moment, in your body, doing that quick scan of taking stock, turning inward. You will hear a gong at the beginning and the end. So take another few moments to notice what you noticed, to write down if you can, to note in some way what that 1 minute was like for you, what you noticed, what it brought up for you, without judgment if you can. So it's noting my mind was all over the place. It's noting I feel tightness in my chest. It's noting I was judging myself the whole time. It's noting it felt really good to breathe and take some slow time, some time of silence. So much of this work, as you know, is inner work. It's taking time to slow down and turn inward. And when that happens, everything that you have pushed down for the day or the week or the month or your entire life starts to bubble back up. And that's a good thing. That's what we want, even though it can be incredibly uncomfortable. Because if it doesn't come out through the front door, it comes out through the back door, through intrusive thoughts and worry and anxiety and depression. So the biggest gift we can give to ourselves is the courage to slow down and stop and allow for all of the uncomfortable places to rise up. So I think we have this idea about meditation that it leads to these places of ecstasy. And it might do that, but you have to walk sometimes through hell first. But it's a conscious hell, as opposed to the hell of living with the pervasiveness of anxiety and intrusive thoughts and the fear of uncertainty. Conscious discomfort is different. No less comfortable, but it's a different spin. It's a different angle. So one of you asked on the forum something like, when I connect to these places inside, these imaginary figures or these wise allies or these meditations, I notice so much uncomfortable feeling come up. And I responded, good, that's right. That is what you will often notice. And it's hard to sit with that. It's hard to stay with it. There are so many ways to distract now more than ever. But you cannot get to more serenity, more inner peace, unless you tolerate and walk through those feelings. So, this is what Jack Kornfield says about that process. He is a very well-known Buddhist teacher. For a long time, I had my little Kabbalah book in the bathroom, and now I have this book, A Lamp in the Darkness, and it's so nourishing. I pick it up and I read one page, and it fills me. Highly encourage you to have something in the bathroom that is nourishing. That's not your phone, as I talked about in the bathroom email. So this is what Jack Kornfield says. At first, just as you can become overwhelmed by sensations in the body, you can feel overwhelmed by strong emotions, especially those arising from unfinished business in the heart. When you practice mindful attention or sit in meditation, whatever is unfinished in you will arise. With a little space and quiet, what you've been avoiding comes out to be tended. It may be love or longing, conflict or desire. If you've been avoiding mourning a relationship that you've lost, you will become aware of the grief you carry for the relationship that's ended. Mindfulness becomes the means for you to fully and deeply grieve. The Urdu poet Ghalib explains, for the raindrop, joy is in entering the river. Travel far enough into sorrow, tears turn into sighing. When after heavy rains the storm clouds disperse, is it not true they've wept themselves clear to the end? Sometimes you weep for your own sorrows, and sometimes for the suffering of others. Sometimes you weep for the state of the world around you. To open to tears is to return to the world through the door of compassion. So I'm often asked, how do you grieve? And of course, as you know from my work in this course, I see being in your physical body, which means your sensations and your emotions, as an integral part of spiritual practice. One is not separate from the other. What Jack Kornfield is saying is, when you see the pain through to the end, it does open, just like the sky after a thunderstorm. Now, I don't think it's quite as simple as he's saying there, and I don't think he means to be simplistic, but when there's a lifetime of pain that you've been avoiding, you don't sit and have a big cry and it moves through you in 20 minutes. It's not like that. And so when people ask me, how do you grieve, there's not a formula. It's meeting the grief as it arises. Sometimes it's through crying, not always. Sometimes it's through writing or moving or dancing or screaming or beating a drum. There's so many ways to move that energy. But the work is about being with it. The word he used is, it's arising to be tended. For so many of us growing up, caregivers didn't know how to tend to the pain, ours and theirs. And so you grow up with untended pain. If your pain had been tended to all along the way, there wouldn't be the buildup. But very, very, very few people have had that experience, especially in the generations that you're from and I'm from. We are now learning. We are in this very exciting time of expanded consciousness, of emotional intelligence, where we are learning how to meet our feelings, which means parents that I come in contact with are meeting their children's feelings in an entirely different way than I think has ever been done before in human history. But you didn't get that. It's unlikely that you did. If you did, you were very, very lucky. So the work now, as you are slowing down, coming into a regular prayer practice, ritual practice, imagination practice, whatever it is for you, feelings will come up. I was sitting in meditation last week, and earlier that evening, I looked out across our creek where we've had this family of bears living. They've had to come down from the mountains because there's not enough food up there. I'm assuming because of our changing climate. And they come down. Maybe they would come down anyway. I don't know. They come down to forage and fatten up for their hibernation. And this was a mother and two cubs. And wow, what a gift to witness these bears so close to us. A bit scary as well, but just an extraordinary experience to see the wild up close. We're so disconnected from these places in our world. And they had been living there for weeks. We saw them several times. And the two little baby cubs were seriously the cutest things I've ever seen in my life. And we saw them wrestling and playing, and the mama always close by. And on this particular evening, I saw the mother walking back up to the mountains in that direction with one cub. And I don't know where the other cub was. It may have been fine. Maybe it was just lagging behind. I don't know. But as I sat in meditation that night, my complete and total heartbreak and grief came up. Not only for those bears, but for all the bears and all the people and all the species who suffer, but especially the animals who are suffering because of human doing. And I wept. I cried and cried and cried. And there was some part of my mind that was saying, does this count as meditation? Usually I sit and I'm quiet and I have my experience that I have. But of course, yes. I just tended to that grief. And so I share this because I think it's important to have as many examples as we can have for what it looks like to be with our pain. Having not grown up with that, we really don't know. It's hard to know what you don't see, what hasn't been modeled for you. And so with my hands on my chest, on my heart, I cried and cried and cried. And for me, it did feel like I cried it through to the end for that moment. I'm not sure there's ever an end to sorrow because it is part of this world. It is one of the strands that comprises our life here. But for that moment, it moved through. And I finished my evening ritual. And I went to sleep. So what we're doing here is meeting ourselves where we are, and quite often that will be the emotional realm. It's learning to meet fear in a different way. The fear comes up, as it always will, daily in some form, to transmute that fear instead of getting entrenched in the habitual response, which is to indulge the fear, often through some form of ritual, either seeking reassurance or checking a door, whatever the ritual is, that gives you that temporary illusion of control. What true ritual does, what true prayer, what true working in the realm of the imagination does, is lifts you above that place of fear, even ever so slightly. And it's a practice. It's not something that you will necessarily notice every single time. So, again, to share a bit of my personal journey with this, it's happening right now in this moment. Our son, Everest, our older son who's 14, is flying in the sky in the glider. This is the first time he's flown since he soloed on August 20th, which I wrote about in my blog. And actually, I don't know if he's soloing today or if he's just having a lesson because it's been so long, and piloting apparently is a skill that you don't retain. It's not like riding a bike. So I'm sitting in uncertainty as we speak. Is my son flying by himself in a glider? Even if he is with an instructor. Oh my goodness. Right? And in my fear mind, I can go to, this is the stupidest thing we've ever done as parents. What are we thinking? We're crazy. And I can let my mind go into all kinds of catastrophic images. But what I did before this call is to catch myself, to catch that habitual fear train and stop it and say, no, it doesn't serve me to go there. And I go to prayer. And I go to prayer. For me, is not just the words, it's also the imagery. Right? That realm of imagination is incredibly powerful. It's the realm of soul. For those of you who struggle with the religious connotation of the word prayer, I'm sharing this to say to you, use it as imagery. Call it something else if you want. And so when I say the prayer that my rabbi gave me the night before Everest soloed, and I was in pure terror, B'yadchar afki ruchi, which means into your hands I place his spirit. And so into your hands I place his spirit, and I imagine Everest being held by bigger hands, hands of his totem, the owl, wings of the owl, wings of the hawk, wings of the clouds. I imagine him being held in safety. That's what I see in my mind. And I conjure that in my mind. It's not something that just appears. I willingly, proactively move my prayer toward the imagination as I see him in his highest joy, connected to his highest self, being guided by hands other than my own. Such a powerful prayer for parents, into your hands, I place his spirit. But this applies to everyone, right? This awareness that there are other realms that we cannot see that are supporting us and supporting our children. Doesn't mean life always turns out the way we want it to. Yes, I pray for his safety. I pray for outcome. But prayer doesn't necessarily mean that we control outcomes. It actually doesn't mean that at all. It means for this moment, I have a choice to go into fear or to elevate into higher mind, into an open heart, into a place of entrusting my child, most precious being on the planet, one of three for me, the third being my husband. I don't have three children. Into a greater field. And it could be, you know, to take it out of religion completely and trusting him into the greater field of his passion. Can I surrender him into his passion? Brother David Steindl-Rast says that passion is what elevates us. Doing what you love, you know, is God realm, is higher realm. And so this is how it goes moment by moment in our lives. We can be pulled into that river of fear. I feel it wanting to pull me because fear says I can control this. And I could control it. I could drive down there and say, no, you can't fly. But I'm choosing not to do that. I'm choosing in this moment to notice the fear wanting to pull me. It's magnetic, that force, because it's so habitual. And because it lives so actively on this planet, and it's everywhere, and it's in the media, and the media is designed to activate your amygdala, the fight or flight response is designed. I just heard an extraordinary interview with an environmentalist named Paul Hawken, who says that the media, something like, I'm not quoting directly, the media is designed to light up your amygdala, that place of primal panic. So fear is in our water. It is in our field. And that would be true even without the media. It's just part of being here on this planet. And it's our moment-by-moment practice to step out of that river and into a different one. One that allows you to breathe. One that reminds you that you are not alone. One that connects you to your highest self, your wise self, your soul. That other river is available to you every minute of every day. And the choices we make determine whether we fall into the fear river or we step out of it. So we're going to move into questions pretty soon. Right now, there's no hands raised, so this is your opportunity, and I much prefer connecting here than on the forum. So if you're here and you asked a question on the forum, please find the courage to raise your hand, and let's connect. I want to read to you, before I open it up to you all, this is just an amazing paragraph, so relevant to this course. By Robert Johnson in his book, We, which if you have not read, it's a must. And as you know, so much of what I teach comes directly from him. So bowing down and paying homage to Robert Johnson. This is what he says. If a man or woman clings to the dominant patriarchal attitude and refuses to make peace with the inner feminine, then she will demand a tribute. She meaning the inner feminine. When we refuse to integrate a powerful new potentiality from the unconscious will exact a tribute one way or another. The tribute may take the form of a neurosis, a compulsive mood, hypochondria, obsessions, imaginary illnesses, or a paralyzing depression. In his writings, Carl Jung gives a vivid example. His patient was a brilliant intellectual, a scientist. The man tried to exist without feelings, without emotional relationships, without a religious life. He suddenly developed an obsessive belief in a stomach cancer. The cancer did not exist physically, yet he suffered all the terrors of hell. The obsession paralyzed him and his professional life. His orderly, rational mind could not solve the problem. He found relief from this obsession only when he consented to reintegrate the feminine side of his psyche, the human values and spiritual values he had discarded many years before. So there you have it in a nutshell. Right? He's talking directly about health anxiety, how compelling it can become, and the message from the unconscious being, pay attention to the feminine. The feminine that exists equally in men and women, the feminine being our relatedness, our inner work, our connection to soul, our connection to dream life, to imagery, to art. It's everything our culture, this is why he says the patriarchy, it's not men or women, it's the broken patriarchy that sequesters and squashes the feminine. And she's not happy about it, right? She's not happy in our own personal bodies. She's not happy about it on the planet. So, and that's sort of the same thing, right? Our body is the body of the planet. Body of the planet is our body, and that is the great call of our times, of which you can feel excited to be a part of, is to reclaim the feminine. Bring that into your life on a daily basis. That's your connection to your emotional life. That's not judging and shaming your feelings. That's your connection to your soul life, your dreams and your art and your creativity. And that's your connection to another realm. Whatever that looks like for you. So every time a symptom arises, you can say, oh, wow, an opportunity to listen to what the message is and to respond differently than I've responded my entire life. Now, none of this is easy. It's easy to say it in a paragraph in a book. It's easy for me to talk about it in a call for 20 minutes. None of this is easy. But to shift your mindset is key, to be able to say, I am living in an exciting time of huge, huge, massive evolution of consciousness is what is being asked globally, in communities, personally. And this is how it's showing up for you. Whatever your particular story is, upset, fear of death, fear of illness, fear of leaving the house, of uncertainty, of doorways, of transition, however it shows up, it's all pointing to the same opportunity, the same invitation, right? Which is to learn to respond to fear differently and to reincarnate the feminine.